I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello and welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers. This week we have just a two-man band from the regulars with myself and Mr. Ross Bell. As you're one of our three, Adam should be back next week, so the anger will also somewhat overwhelm next week, I'm sure. But anyway, how are we, Ross?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Suffering from a post-Christmas cold, it seems, but yeah, not too bad.
Not too bad. This week we will look over the Seahawks' fifth loss of the season on Saturday versus the Cardinals, run through a few roster moves and shapes, downs from the VMAC, delve into a couple of true or false with some of your questions from the masses, all before previewing this Sunday's regular season closer at Levi Stadium against the 2-13 San Francisco 49ers. But first, a few notes, a quick reminder really on a few things. Firstly, that 2017 UK Seahawkers membership is open. For details on how to join and what membership in 2017 will bring you, you can log on to the chapter website at www.ukseahawkers.com. It's on one of the tabs on top of the page, along with all the relevant contact information for presidents, committee members, and yours truly. Also, talking of the chapters, spaces are still available to join us for the 2017 AGM and subsequent podcast recording and Super Bowl viewing, all at the Willoughby Pub in Kingston upon Thames. We will be putting on a live pod, as I just said, that night following the AGM, and it should be quite a good night. So if you want to get more involved with the chapter from 2017 and find out just what is on the dock for the chapter next year, the AGM is open to attend for paid members only. Details are on the Facebook page, or you can contact me on one of the social media platforms also. See you guys there. We have just under 30 yeses so far, which is a pretty good start. On to VMAC. It was another season ender to deal with this past weekend, with Tyler Lockett suffering what looked like a horribly gnarly leg break. His recovery will be a long one and a somewhat devastating blow to one of the better young players in the league, and obviously a key part of this team and offense. No E was placed on IR on Tuesday, and former Washington Husky wide receiver Kaysen Williams was signed from the practice squad to take his spot on the 53. But it was just all pretty damn awful for Lockett, wasn't it, Ross?
Oh, it was gross. I felt so bad for him. But the way that they repeatedly show the injuries, because it was that close to a touchdown as well, I couldn't watch after a certain point. I saw it two or three times and just thought, I can't watch this anymore. So I had to just like basically look away from the screen and ask my wife to just tell me when it's not being shown.
Yeah, it was awful. I thought I put on my Facebook that it brought back all that David Booth flashback as a Coventry City fan. That's, it was horrible.
Well,
they said reactions.
The bone pierced the skin, didn't it?
Yeah, which is what happened with Booth, but also with Booth, he got a massive infection in his leg. Yeah. He never played a proper game of football again. He still limps to this day, I think, as well. Yeah. But yeah, that's, hopefully it's a brighter result for Lockett, but it's just absolutely devastating. So it was, as you say, Ross, it was horrible to watch when the player moves. Oh, yeah, anyway. But anyway, elsewhere for moves to team side, running back Calvin Taylor and centre Ross Burbank to the practice squad. The spots were made available by Kaysen's promotion, and linebacker Cache Palacio, the former Washington State Cougar, who's been put on the IR list on the practice squad. Taylor was signed 2 weeks ago to the 53, and as we said 2 weeks ago, he is the son of former Jacksonville running back Fred, but he was cut from the 53 last week. Burbank played collegiately at Virginia, so cue panic over Justin Britt and Joey Hunt, isn't it, Ross?
My optimism levels are at an all-time low for this season, but if Justin Britt is injured, I'm done. I'm just turning it in now.
Yeah. But yeah, moving on to this past Saturday and the Christmas Eve sadness. A strong defensive start was wasted by yet again a struggling offense. When the defense did wilt somewhat, the Cardinals had a 14-0 lead in a flash. The 14-3 score at halftime was somewhat fortunate. As we said, the Seahawks offense was bad yet again. And even the defense had a rare deep post pass play broke through for an opposition 80-yard touchdown, summed it up all quite nicely, didn't it, that first half. The third quarter saw some defensive force return, and the offence managed to find somewhat of a spark. A 2-yard pass to the back of the end zone gave number 15, Jermaine Kearse, his highlight of the year, undoubtedly, as he got 2 feet down on a really impressive touchdown grab. Then the madness that was the fourth quarter. A quarter which included 41 points saw the Seahawks rebound from 21-10 down immediately when Mr. Baldwin sprung free.
Here comes the blitz. Russell steps up, throws. Doug's got the catch. Turns back inside 30. 25 running, 20. 15, 10, 5. Who's in? Touchdown! Seahawks! Doug Baldwin from 42 yards out. Makes the catch, turns back inside, and there was nobody in the middle of the field to stop him, and he ran all the way to pay dirt.
Despite that, the Cardinals soon after led 31-18 with less than 7 minutes to go. It was then that the offense remembered and was able, because of the O-line issues, to get the ball to number 88, and he's still good at football.
Four-man rush, Russell stops, throws down the middle. Graham makes the catch. Down at the 20, running to the 15, the 10, the 5, spins in, touchdown, Seahawks! Jimmy Graham from 37 yards out, taking advantage again of the defense. Open down the middle of the field, and Graham fights his way in.
A good and sharpish, which is most important, defensive stop gave the offense the ball back once again, and Paul Richardson, all alone in the end zone, saw the game tied, much to the amazement of the Fox commentators. The kicking game demons returned, however, as Hauschka missed the resulting extra point, as him and John Ryan tried to recover from yet another awful snap. Tie game, a far too easy possession down the field by Arizona, and a Catanzaro walk-off handed the Seahawks their fifth loss of the season. It was disappointing all round, despite that fourth quarter explosion, wasn't it, Russ?
Yeah, a lot of people place the blame on the defence in the kicking game. I think the kicking game can take some of it, but I can't find a way to blame the defence for this. Admittedly, they gave up 21 points in the fourth quarter, but how hard they worked when the offence was completely lifeless in the first three quarters. They must have been exhausted. You and Adam have said, David Johnson is a pounder, and he pounded us all day long. And you can't expect that level of concentration from them for an entire game. It's mad.
No, but also the most striking thing for me is after all the stuff in the week we saw from Sherman having a go at the offence.
Yeah.
We didn't see anything from the offence. Obviously, probably for that reason you just mentioned there. Didn't see any offensive players put any of the blame on the defence. Completely different tact to what we saw the week prior.
Mm.
But if anyone like Doug Baldwin or even Russell, who's never going to do it, but if anyone on the offensive side come out and said, we did our part in the fourth quarter, the defense just disappeared in front of our eyes, then they'd have full reason to, with how Sherman reacted to a 1 yard pass to Jimmy Graham in the back of the end zone the week before. It's just, but yeah. Obviously it didn't happen.
Well, they mentioned on Fox that the Sherman's comments get in their head, because they had a couple of possessions from inside the five and they were not throwing it. They were trying to run it every time, or they faked the handoff and Russell just got absolutely nailed by one of their defenders.
Yeah, but someone on Twitter has broke that down massively, and it's just an absolute, something's wrong on the left side of that line for that play.
Yeah, Glorinski just completely.
Because if Feddy goes one way and blocks his man, Thomas Walls picks up his linebacker, and yeah. Glorinski's blocks someone who Feddy and Britt are blocking, and then there's a free runner. But if there isn't that free runner, if Glorinski just holds up for half a second,
yeah.
Jimmy Graham's in the end zone, and it's 7 points in this different game, but. There's a lot of examples of that this year. The offensive line, yet again, was just an abomination for the most part. But before we get onto that, Russell Wilson, 4 touchdowns. That's the weirdest 4-touchdown game you're going to see from him, isn't it?
4 touchdowns, 350 yards. The stats look great. I mean, 45 throws. I think that's the record for him, isn't it? The most dropbacks in a game.
Yeah,
first half just looked completely lifeless, like the rest of the offense. But then him and he just seemed to think, right, well, I'm just going to target 89 over and over and over again. And it worked. 19 targets for 171 yards.
Yeah, the the disparity in receptions for Baldwin compared to everyone else that was combined is is glaring. But yeah, I think the thing with Wilson that second half is that the O-line blocked someone a few times. The first half, he didn't have a chance. There's that picture which is doing the rounds of guess how this play ended up, guess who's on the bottom of that pile. And that's what it was far too often the first half. And that is not on, I'm going to roll up that hill again, Russ. It's not on Darrell Bevell. You cannot call a play when your quarterback is hit before he's turned around.
No, it's not. It's on Tom Cable.
There's no play in the playbook it's not on Darrell Bevell. We'll get on to who it is on in
yes,
a second. But it's just, if you're blaming Darrell Bevell for how Russell Wilson was in that first 2.5 quarters, then you need to turn in your fan card to a certain extent, because it's just, it's not
the handoff off, is it? He has to just take the hit himself, otherwise he's just putting Wilson in danger.
And we saw it last week as well, when they try and do like he goes to hand it off and the pass rush is that quickly in his face, he changes his mind and runs outside. He takes like a 3 or 4 yard loss. That could have been a 7 yard loss and a possible fumble on the handoff again. But that's not on Darrell Bevell.
No.
But anyway, I was just mentioning there, Doug Baldwin, a game-breaking safety blanket, if there ever was one. 13 receptions, 171 yards, and that touchdown. It did see him pass Bobby Engram into fourth all-time receiving for the Seahawks, which is spectacular, really, how quickly he seems to have done it. 1,500 yards until he passes Darryl Jackson and gets into the top three. He now also has another 1,000-yard season. He's special, isn't he, number 89?
He is, and I said during the game, he makes catches that if Odell Beckham made them or Antonio Brown made them, that they'd be talking about for weeks on NFL coverage. But he just does it every week and just carries on about his game like it's just, that's just what I do. And I mean, it's going to take a lot to hit number one on that list, but he's definitely going to finish in the top two, I think.
Yeah, if anyone has a few spare few minutes, just go on to Pro Football Reference, go on the Seahawks Encyclopedia receiving records, and just look at how far Steve Largent is ahead of everyone. Everyone. He has like 40 more touchdowns than number two. It's unbelievable how much better he was than everyone else.
Yeah.
But yeah, the game-breaking, how special and how you expect all those starry catches from Baldwin. When Jermaine Kearse come down with that touchdown, I actually thought it was 89. I actually exclaimed, "The dog!" And then he stood up at 15. I was like, okay.
I said to my wife, I'm not celebrating that touchdown, Jermaine. You've done crap all season. I'm not celebrating. You score it now.
Yeah. It's a hearty applause, but it was a lot like the catch. He didn't quite get down in New Orleans at the end of the game. It's pretty much just obviously smaller field to work with. But yeah, now for the offensive line. It's getting slightly boring now, isn't it? We'll go in here. Well, I will. Anyway, ready? Tom Cable cannot keep this job. People gripe about the lack of investment in the O-line. That doesn't really matter or holds much truth. He's had 3 first-round picks, a second-round pick, 2/3, and a hell of a lot of stay on players, probably more stay on players than any coach that has passed through the Pete Carroll, John Schneider building of VMAC. He had stay on players like Sweezy getting the start for this team in week one against the Arizona Cardinals way back when. He's instrumental in the drafting these players, and him trying to move the spotlight onto other people other than him, like he did yesterday, is understandable, but doesn't wash at all with me. If he's anywhere near the draft war room in April, then it's somewhat flawed to even give him anything more than a nod of approval on a player. Buffalo just sacked Rex Ryan. So if anyone has a spare few days, jump in your car, go to VMAT, pick him up and drive him there. It's an ideal spot for him. He can use his rep off the back of a top-tier running back they have in Shady McCoy. The mess here has gone on far, far too long, with no one falling on their swords, as it were. That has to change with Cable. We have a couple of promising parts with Fant, who at the very least is going to be a serviceable backup. Britt, who is with an asterisk, a Pro Bowl centre. Yeah. And Ifedi, who just needs one half of his game to catch up with the other one. And we have a decent three-part. The only weak spot is right tackle. And it was a weak spot when he rolled into town, because of Brennan Jackamine, you just give up 15-yard penalties every snap. Unquestionably, Cable has failed, really, at that position in particular. But there's a thing where people say it takes 3 years. Cable gives players 3 years.
Yeah.
You can't do that in a in a league where the window, as Adam said last week, is so small for such a little time. You can't take 3 years. I mean, Justin Britt is a prime example.
Yeah.
But we cannot wait 3 years for Jermaine Ifedi to not just lunge forward and miss every stunt going in defensive playbooks. Because look how quickly the read option pretty much disappeared from the game.
Yeah.
If teams, when they're game planning for next year, see Ifedi do that against Tampa Bay, against Arizona, against... who did we play last week?
The Rams.
The Rams against Carolina, then they're just going to do that on every 45, 50 snaps. And there's no running back or fullback in the league that can stop that for 45 or 50 snaps. If we have a fullback or running back doing that in pass protection, then we don't have a run game and we don't stay on the track of how Pete Carroll wants to play offensive football in this sport. And it's just, Cable is the root of most of the problems. Not all the problems, because the defense is struggling without some of its players. Like I said, Jermaine Curse has been missing for 13 weeks, pretty much. Now we're without Tyler Lockett, who's just a game breaker, game changer, field flipper, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
We're missing an absolute generational, franchise-defining running back in Marshawn Lynch, quite clearly, because of just how constant he was. I mean, I don't know how many different running backs have started for us this year, but it's just getting ridiculous now.
Mm.
But do not give him another chance to make right on what he's got wrong so far. If there's offensive line is not great this year in the draft, but don't give him the chance to reach for a player and give him 3 years, because it needs to be sorted. When you give a quarterback $20 million, it needs to be sorted sharpish, and Cable cannot have any involvement with that, I don't think. Ross?
I mean, I can't disagree with anything you've just said. His reputation around the league, I don't understand where it's come from. Whether it's self-hype or whether it's Pete Carroll hyping him, it's just look at what he's done with our offensive line. It's madness in positions. Like you say, 3 years. If we give another 3 years to these guys, Russell Wilson's going to be 30, 31, 32, and you're wasting the prime years of a man's career, basically. And especially this kind of quarterback, he needs to have that read option available to him, and it's not, like you said. You can't even get away with handing the ball off in the backfield sometimes to risk losing the ball. Thomas Rawls, eight carries for 8 yards. He got banged up, but, I mean, he had absolutely nowhere to run. They seemed to get their stuff together in the second half. Collins for 28 yards on basically one series, and then that was it. We just stopped running the ball, it seemed. But, yeah, you can't have an offense with no run game. It's just not usable in the NFL.
Not with our O-line, because obviously people just pin their ears back and just walk past Bradley Sal at right tackle. I mean, it's week 16, it's week 17, and we still don't know who our right tackle is.
I've stopped even taking notice who's playing right
tackle.
How
is that even a thing when you've put... it's just... But yeah, elsewhere on offense, Jimmy Graham was seemingly rightly as well pissed off after that touchdown. He didn't do his usual celebration, he just walked off the field.
Three targets.
Jimmy Graham's lack of targets, as it were, it's all down to what we just spoke about, isn't it? Because Russ has no time to get the ball 8 yards downfield. It's all outside passes, 1-2 yards past the, and it's yak all the time, isn't it? So if the O-line saw it, Jimmy Graham can get open. As Adam pointed out, he gets open a remarkable amount of ridiculously often. But you just don't have... You see him open, then you look at Russ, and he's under three defensive linemen. It's just like that's you can't moan about Jimmy Graham not getting the ball and not put even some of that blame on how bad the O-line is. Agree?
Yeah, I mean, he immediately needs to be bumped up to the number two wide receiver, and he needs to stop playing in line and blocking. Just use him as a wide receiver. We've got Luke Wilson, we've got Brandon Williams, I'm sure we've got someone else that can help out at the right tackle. Yeah, Nick Vinette, who's supposed to be this great young blocking tight end. Spread out wide.
It was strange when I saw that Vinette was inactive last week, and even if he doesn't do a good job, just another body out there.
Yeah.
Would have been better than what... just obviously, as you say, it just restricts Jimmy so much. Defensive side, as we said, I think they do need to take someone to play. Giving up 20 points in the fourth quarter is somewhat unheard of for this defense, but at the same time, it's unacceptable. It took that long for the offense to protect Russ and get the ball moving. Hashtag extend Bevel. But then the defense wilted. What happened there then? Was it... Obviously, Stephen Terrell was beaten weirdly and convincingly and embarrassingly, really, on the massive long ball touchdown. But what just happened on defense?
I think it's just a combination of 17 weeks of having to carry a team and been on the field for just extraordinary amounts of time. But one sack on a man that can't move around in the pocket, that's not good enough. That's terrible. Their offensive line is not great, yet hardly any pressure. I can't explain that at all, really. But I mean, Sherman whiffed big time on J.J. Nelson late in the fourth, didn't he? He just turned the wrong way, and by the time he'd got where he was supposed to be, he had to tackle Nelson for a 40-yard loss at the one-yard line.
Yeah, it was kind of delaying the inevitable on that one. But yeah, that is going to happen. Sherman's main, it's been the case for ever, Sherman. His main weakness is those small, quick, shifty receivers, because I think the one game that always sticks out is when T.Y. Hilton just ate his dinner in Indianapolis 3-4 years ago. But that's the only, it happens again with J.J. Nelson, because Fitzgerald, I don't know what he ended up with, but he didn't seem to have much in the way of success against Deshaun Shedd. But it was just bizarre. I mean, you kind of, you've seen that late game, final 90-second drive of a game, defensive lapse, obviously, against Carolina, even against the 49ers in the championship game when the tip, they still drove the ball down to the 14-yard line with little to no resistance. So it does happen, but for it to happen at least three times, or four times as it did with however many times it did, I can't remember. it's somewhat worrying. On Sherman, the fallout seemed to be mainly coming from the Fox Sport director, who kept cutting to him every time the offense had the ball within the 5 or 10 yard line. Every time the ball, well, let's see what Sherman's doing. Oh, he's sitting down. And it's just, that was just trying to make a...
They're trying to create a story, aren't they?
Yeah, trying to make a bigger mountain out of a mountain, really, wasn't it? It's all very strange. But do you think there was much fallout, as you said, you mentioned earlier, with all the runs that they tried? Do you think that was the main fallout, if there was one?
I like to think it didn't play into their heads that this has very publicly happened last week. But I don't know, some of those play calls were slightly odd. And I don't know, if you've got someone like Jimmy Graham in the end zone, and like you say, if Glinski had picked up a block, Graham was free and it was a touchdown, a very different game. But I don't know, we come on to a question later on in our true or false that kind of, I think there's some resonance behind. Just J.J. Nelson, 3 receptions, 132 yards.
Yeah, after Robert Woods did some of them as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was all very, very disappointing. It was quite easily the most deflating loss of the season. As you said, the window for this team this year is possibly 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks if they get the bye. I don't see much hope of success in January, but I'll happily be proved wrong, but I just don't see it coming. Any other thoughts on the game, Ross?
I just want to kind of move on from it altogether, but a quick shout out to Paul Richardson. He stepped up. You've been banging a Paul Richardson drum since he's been drafted,
I think. 3 years, yeah.
And he can replace Lockett. He's not quite a specialist, Tyler, but he has something about him, and great touchdown at the end, and just a couple of clutch catches as well.
Yeah, it doesn't work like when he's given space. It doesn't work that as well as Lockett, but he's not probably as a polished route runner as Lockett. But yeah, it's a job I've been banging. It's a job I'll quite happily loft high on Sunday night if he has a big game in Tyler's stead. One to praise on offense, is it Richardson for you?
It has to be, and also a slight nod to Alex Collins as well. His running, he ran hard. He ran like, he just reminds me of Christian Michael so much, the way he runs and the way he looks kind of out of control. But he did well. He got the best from the holes that were created for him.
Yeah, definitely. From a player who looked like he was probably on his way out by this time about a month ago, he really did show, and he, all the talk they gave him in the couple of weeks leading up, that he was finally coming around. He was finally starting to slow down and click for him. It showed up, but then, as you say, they started throwing it, the driver, after he got 30-odd yards. Yeah, that's all very strange. One surprise on defence.
It's getting boring, but Bobby Wagner again, who's just leads every week, double figures.
Broke the franchise record in tackles for a season on Saturday, and no one's talking about it. He's going to absolutely eviscerate that record in probably this week with how the 49ers run things. But yeah, Bobby Wagner, he's just the Pro Bowl nod. He has to be middle linebacker All Pro. He really has to be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year. He's not going to be because Khalil Mack is presence, yeah. But he has to be in the top three or five. I don't know how the voting works for that, but yeah, he is just having one hell of a year with not in Keekly's shadow because of his issues with concussions. Mm. He's just stepping out and stepping up. It's like the O-line, it's quite boring now because it's just the same guy every week. But yeah, I'd say it was all very disappointing. We move on. And moving on now, time to bring in our guest and talk Week 17 and the 49ers.
Second down, four-man blitz, throwing near side, and he's got it. It's Doug Baldwin and a first down and a big gain. Here's a blitz. Wilson on that ankle runs away, throws, diving. Did he make the catch? Oh my goodness.
That penalty is declined. They're going in the place. First down.
Three-man rush this time. Wilson's got time. He's going to let it fly. And he's got a man. And he's got a completion. It is Baldwin.
And Russell Wilson, what a beautiful throw to Doug Baldwin. Tremaine Brock falls behind.
Blitz again. Coming near side. Unloads it. Gets rid of it. It's Baldwin. Third and six. Boykin will throw it. Coming near side. Complete. Doug Baldwin's got it. Though it's a rookie Boykin in. He takes. He's going to get Baldwin again. Javon Boykin coming in. He's looking good. Third and six for Boykin. Blitz coming. Gets rid of it. Near side. And he's got a completion. And there's Baldwin for his first NFL touchdown for Boykin.
And he found his guy. And again, the patience in his route. Baldwin in the slot.
This week, to help me and Ross preview this weekend's somewhat dead rubber, especially if the Saints lose against the Falcons at 6 o'clock, is Mark Payne. Mark is one of the hosts of a great NFL UK podcast called The Pigskin Podcast. If you haven't listened to it, it also lives on Podbean, and you are definitely missing out on one of the better UK NFL podcasts. NFL Wide Chat with Mark, and with most often his co-host is James. Well worth your time, even when James poo-poos the Huskies. Mark, though, for his sins, is a 49ers fan, to help us. So help us give us his, I'm sure, upbeat and very positive opinion on the Niners in 2016. How are we, Mark?
I'm very well. I'm very well. The 49ers, less so, but we'll get on to that.
So is upbeat and positive how you'd describe your feelings on the team this year?
I mean, I got to the point where midway through the game against the Rams, I was just thinking, if the 49ers can do one thing for me this week, having blown us up against the Jets, they can lose. And lo and behold, we did exactly what we did last year, get into the final games of the season, come up against the Rams and win. So
Capric's gone rogue.
Describe my feelings as upbeat. Yeah, rogue, you started playing really well. So I was listening to you talking about your offensive line group. We have a problem with our offensive line group, but our problem's really on the other side of the ball. Our run defense is absolutely catastrophic. To give you some kind of indication, we're the 32nd ranked run defense, which is obviously, you know, the worst in the league. But the Browns are 31st ranked at the moment, and they've given up nearly 300 yards less over the season. There's no one even close to how bad we are. We're giving up 4.9 yards of rushing attempt, which, if you're looking for elite running backs, that's nearly the sort of yardage they'd expect. With absolutely hopeless. So I'm really looking at this with some trepidation towards the weekend.
But yeah, before we dive into the preview, just want to give people insight into why the 49ers, which is probably a question you get quite a bit at the minute, and how did you get into the sport, and which gives us so much content every year?
Well, essentially, I was always trying to find a team, and I never really quite knew where to go. I support West Ham as a football fan, and I basically wanted to pick a team that was in a similar situation. I started following the sport around 2005-ish, at which point the 49ers were almost as bad as we are now. And so basically I wanted a team that had history in the past, were last successful in the 80s, and could kind of give me some kind of understanding of the sport without jumping in at the top tier, because I didn't want to go and support a team like the Patriots. I wanted to work it out from the bottom up.
Good man.
Yeah. And they've mirrored the 49ers, the West Ham rather.
Yeah. and they did work their way up, but they weren't at the top for as long as they appeared like they were going to be at the top four. Is that fair?
No, that's fair. I feel that most 49ers fans will tell you when the battle between Borky and Harbaugh, nearly everyone was on Harbaugh's side. I really don't rate Borky as a GM, and it was kind of devastating when we lost him. And I think the truth is worn out by the terrible draft picks we've been left with on the whole, and we're now looking up the rest of the division, which is quite frustrating given where we were not so long ago.
Even as a Seahawks fan, I was on Harbaugh's side in that.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It's devastating as well, because we picked quite good defensive players relatively consistently, but you know, if you ask Borky to pick a wideout, and you'll be in trouble. I think we've missed on 4 first round picks in his reign, which is incredible. I mean, wow. And when I say missed, I mean not even in the league after 2 years. It's a traditional sort.
Yeah, I watched the game last week with the Rams and a 49ers fan who obviously both mates, and hapless seemed to be the theme for most of it. I mean, we did a thing where we'd have a shot of fireball whiskey every time it was a touchdown. So after like 4 minutes, we were in trouble, but then there wasn't a touchdown for 2 hours. So quite accurate for what Sunday bought and showed.
I think the most frustrating part of it was the we really managed to get something going with Carter. He's been one of the lone bright sparks on that offense, and you know, he's done it largely without the help of a line that can open up holes. We lost him halfway through the game. Thankfully, it doesn't seem like it's a serious injury, but the rest of the offense is so dysfunctional. And I don't put it on Kaepernick really at all. I think if we're putting our best wide receiver out as Torrey Smith, the man who has famously got one route, which is the go route, and you know, he's not even fast enough to run that anymore. And in McDonald's, he's had a better year, but he's not the sort of transformative first-round pick that we could have had if we'd, you know, taken Kelsey in that slot, for example. You know, we're working with very limited tools. And I'm really disappointed with the way this offense has declined over the years. It's just getting weaker and weaker. We're putting weaker and weaker parts inside it. And hapless is probably a fair assessment of where we are at the moment.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts, 2 months back into the Kaepernick as a starting quarterback? He's likely not going to be a 49er next year, obviously, but he's somewhat unlucky, if that's the word to use at this point.
I would say at the moment, he's still got that spark. I thought he'd lost the power in his throw when he came back, which would have ended his career in the NFL, but he's getting the zip back. The problem is he's still quite a nervous player in the pocket, and he gets excited very easily. So he missed 2 throws to McDonald, where McDonald was wide open in the end zone, and he put it about 10 feet over his head. But then he's so frustrating because he also has this ability to squeeze the ball into tiny gaps and make incredible NFL throws where they're, you know, cutting across routes and throwing people open. He also started doing something that Russell Wilson does, getting outside the pocket and throwing when he looks like he's going to run. It opens up the run game for him, which is obviously a big part of his game. So I think somewhere along the line, if someone can buff out the rough edges from him, they will get a decent quarterback out of him. You're right in saying that I think his time in San Francisco is over, which is a shame because, I mean, we've only got Blaine Gabbert massively sold on the quarterback class coming up.
No, the quarterback class is, especially as early as you're going to be picking as well, it's not.
Yeah, it's a horrible,
not where you want to go.
All time to be picking this early.
Yeah. But obviously, we switched on Trent, Jim. It has to be the other way around this summer, this off-season, mate.
Oh, yeah.
Chip stays, Trent goes.
Got to get rid of him. I mean, Trent Baalke's selections over the last 3 or 4 years, I mean, it starts back to the sort of time we were picking the likes of Marcus Lattimore, you know, who's a hot prospect with obviously a terrible knee injury that we picked in the 3rd round. You take a risk on a player like that when you've got a rusty, but it was those sort of picks where you're picking players that are huge risks that never really pan out. We obviously we lost out on he retired early. Chris Borland. It was an incredible middle linebacker, and I was really excited for the prospect. We're losing Pat Willis, and you know Bowman's coming towards the end of his career as well, and he was seen like the natural successor, Borland. But since then, I mean, I can't think of many players that have really added to the talent. And the two that have been the successes for me, the two major successes, have been Armstead and DeForest Buckner. Both been very good, but clearly have got a large amount of Chip Kelly involvement in the latter one. And the first one, there was a suggestion that was maybe attempted to bring him over in the first place. So yeah. I'm not entirely sold on Trent as a GM, and I'm really looking forward to moving on from this era as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so do you think Chip Kelly gets another year then, next year?
I hope he does. I think, you know, if you look at it statistically, we there's a lot of reasons you can say that, you know, that he has as well as he can, but I think the pieces he's working with are, I think we're the worst roster in the NFL, and I don't say that lightly. I don't think there's anyone that's got as few talented players. I would say we've got two elite players with a few very good players. And then the rest of the team, I mean, some of them would struggle to make a roster and they're starting. It's really quite depressing. I was watching the Browns game about 5 weeks ago, and I just remember thinking all of these players can play in the NFL. And then I remember watching the 49ers game, which was in the late window, and questioning that same talent. Yeah.
Bowman's messed up most of the season.
Yeah.
Is that a key part to how poorly the defense has looked, do you think? Because obviously that level of experience is unmatched in that field.
I think Bowman is a huge loss. And another man that's not getting as much sort of chatter around the league is Ian Williams. He's a very good nose tackle. And between them, they deal with the run game almost single-handedly. And it just shows the weakness of the likes of Michael Wilhoit, who I really don't rate as a player at all. And Gerald Hodges, who is pretty good in the pass game, but you know the run game is not for him. And you know, having had two of the best middle linebackers for so long, being a mainstay of that team, you really start to realize that this team falls apart when you don't have good linebacker play. And you know, these two are the best we've got, but they're really not any quality at all. I mean, what I would say, I mentioned him a few times, but DeForest Buckner is very quietly having close to a defensive rookie of the year campaign. He's getting pressure on nearly every series multiple times and gets right into the quarterback's face, and I'd expect him to cause problems for Russell Wilson at the weekend, particularly with your O-line.
you have a feel.
I mean, our problem is he could well do. We're missing Armstead, obviously. He's now on IR, but he's been a big positive for us. But yeah, it's been difficult.
So are there much shreds of hope outside of Hyde and the Oregon kids, really, or is it just reassess when Trent goes?
I think we're looking to restart. I mean, there are a few bright sparks that we've seen so little. I mean, we've got 22 players on IR this year. A number of them are rookies that were coming through and players that we were expecting to make big seasons, that breakout seasons. We had a little bit of play out of Ray Armstrong. He played about four games, and then I was quite impressed with the progress Jimmy Ward's made. Again, he went on IR very shortly after he made his break. Will Redmond made a nice step up. And if you look at the cornerbacks that are currently playing, Dante Johnson and Rashad Robinson alongside Jermaine Brock, that's probably relatively a strong unit for the moment. Safety, however, is something I think they're going to have to reassess. I think Jakiski Tartt and Tom Bethea are starting to look like they're a bit past it. And we've lost Eric Reed now, but I'm wondering if he's the player we thought he was sort of a couple of years ago now.
Yeah, but from the outside, what are your thoughts on the Seahawks this year?
Well, I must admit, I was listening to you talk about Tyler Lockett, and as a little side note, I'm a massive fan of Tyler Lockett. I had him in my fantasy team, and I had him sitting on the bench all year waiting for him to make his breakout campaign. I put him in last week, and he obviously had a huge game, and I was really looking a big game again. That sounds bizarre. I always wanted him to do well and the Seahawks to lose, but that's that's rivalry. But yeah, I thought he was going to have and because that touchdown was taken off the board, and because he was tackled short of the end zone, I lost my fantasy Super Bowl by 0.6 of points. So personal note. But no, I think this year the Seahawks team has still got that gritty determination that, you know, this Russell Wilson peak Carroll era has been defined by. You never really look like you're out of games, even when you're down big. But I do doubt your Super Bowl prospects. I think this is a good team, but I think until that O-line it's going to be difficult for you to get past, you know, the likes of Dallas, who have got units of strength across the team. And even the teams like the Falcons, I can see, I know you beat them season, but I think come playoff time, that could be a difficult proposition.
Yeah, most definitely. I think getting the number two seed is massive because it gives the players a chance to go have a week off, really, rest up a little bit. We have, our bye week was quite early this year, but then also we've got people like CJ ProSize who sound like they're about 2 or 3 weeks away, so having the chance of getting him back, who is he showed against the Patriots, who's an absolute game changer, really, even as a rookie. So I think the bye week is a massive, massive thing for the Seahawks this year, more so than other years. But yeah, for now, me and Ross will try and decipher some of our keys from our side of the ball. So yeah, again, Ross, offensive rhythm needs to be found, doesn't it?
we need to establish a run game. I think that's vital. Like Mark said, if their offensive line, defensive line is that bad, and their linebackers are whiffing on the run game, it needs to be a big game for Rules or Collins. One of them needs to just step up and kind of put in excess work because of how crappy our offensive line is.
Yeah, any worried at all about how, not brittle, but how often Rules seems to get injured and bruises and stuff like that? Is that some of a worry for you long term, or?
I think it's hard because obviously we've been incredibly lucky, I suppose, with the years we've seen Lynch and the way a bruise wouldn't keep Lynch out of a game.
He'd just play.
Exactly, yeah. It'd run through more contact just to make that bruise bigger, probably. But he is slightly brittle, but I don't know. It's still early, but he's had some big injuries already, but I don't know. We'll see how he goes.
Yeah, the run game for me is sort of said on virtually every podcast, I think, it's somewhat addressing the draft, but also that took a hit this week with another drafting Seahawks player staying in school, Royce Freeman.
Never listened to the podcast.
He's staying in school. Yeah, they're clearly doing it. Nah, I'm not going there. but yeah, Mark, from the outside, are you surprised about how seemingly clear it is with Miss Lynch, even for how important he was? Is it still a surprise?
Yeah. I mean, I was a massive fan of Thomas Rules last year. I thought he was one of the most exciting players to break out, and I was expecting him to go on and possibly exceed what you've been able to do with Marshawn Lynch in terms of the run game. And to see you struggle so much has been one of the shocks of the year, to be honest. And the brittleness of Rules is something you've got to be concerned of. We have our own brittle but mercurial back in Hyde, and those players where you're so used to, we come from Gore as well, a player that you could just put in game after game and you just do the same thing over and over again, and it is very difficult to adapt for an offense when you're so used to the run game just always being there. But I think Collins is a good option as well. I think both of them will have a field day on Sunday. I mean, we're probably talking, I think we've only not given up 100 yards twice, and in those games we gave up 93 yards, so I think your concerns on that are not to be worried about, you know. But I think you're looking at Rules and having that question, is he going to be consistent enough in terms of staying on the field for them to get a good, big contract? Because that's where the debate's going to come when it comes to you know, renew. Because he's going to get it somewhere, and it's whether you want to pay him for it.
Yeah, I think even in the short sample size we've got this season, CJ ProSize has kind of pushed ahead of Rules for me as the main back because of what else he can bring.
But at the same time, we've had 4 months of CJ ProSize, and he's had three relatively big injuries. So it's the same asterisk next to his name as well. So
yeah, true.
Running back early is probably high up on the. Higher up than we probably expected on the Seahawks draft boards at this point. Offensive line just has to be serviceable, doesn't it, really? I mean, as Mark said, they've got the two Oregon, or one of the two Oregon kids, and not a lot else is going to be in the Russ's face. So if he gets thrown around like he was on last Saturday, it's a bigger worry, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, they need to just, Fetty especially, just stop falling for the stunt. Just watch and film.
Stop falling. Snap, he falls forward. And just, if something clicks with him, he's going to be a good player, but it's just not at the minute. On the defensive side, obviously, pass rush needs to get some work in. Kaepernick is one of those where we have to try and keep him in the pocket somewhat and make him throw the ball a little bit rushed. Joe Staley's relatively solid still, isn't he, Mark? But elsewhere, it's not great on the O-line, is it, for you?
Yeah, I mean, we've had Trent Brown on the other side, who when we...
He's huge, he's massive.
He looks like someone sort of supersized a Madden player in the game. He's absolutely enormous, but he's been playing right tackle most of the year. And a lot of people thought he was a bit of a joke prospect when we signed him. It's like, oh, you pick the massive fat guy that doesn't move. And he's actually turned out to be pretty good. On the ends of the line are pretty solid. He even went over to Joe Staley, was out last week, and did a pretty good job. The middle of the line is hopeless. I mean, we've had to put up with Michael, with Kilgore in the middle, and I think he got the worst rating on Pro Football Focus this year for any player at any position in a game. He had
it's quite impressive when you watch Bradley Sal play for some reason.
He had a sequence. I think he had one snap where he snapped the ball along the ground straight to Kaepernick's feet, then got beaten by somebody because he turned sideways to the ball and just tried to tackle it. And then got done for holding. So he managed to fumble, hold, and beat your man. So thankfully, he's been put on IR this week, so we don't have to put up with that. But, I mean, the rest of the line is just average.
Tom Cable would probably scout him. Garnett is not...
Tom Cable would probably bang the table for him whatever when he is coming in the league. So it sounds like Michael Bennett might eat this week.
Oh, God.
hopefully, yeah, because... I seem to be on an island with this one, but I'm slightly disappointed in his play this year. I think he talks a bigger game than he's actually produced this year. Obviously, bad injury, but yeah, he needs to up his sack numbers. He's only got four this year. Frank Clark, Cuncliffe Averill are miles ahead of him. But yeah, I think it's a big game for Wagner and Wright as well, just to keep Kaepernick in that pocket and just make him throw to his favourite receiver, number 25.
Yeah. there's more mediocre receivers for Sherman to cover this week. I think passes.
Jeremy Curley will break off a good 80-yard touchdown catch, don't worry.
In fairness to Curley, on a serious note, Curley has actually been really impressive. As a slot receiver is something we've not had for a long time, and Curley's been great, but the point is you don't win games when you've only got a slot receiver and a tight end. They cause problems, but I think, you know, Curley running against Wagner is a frightening prospect.
That's comforting. Obviously, Stephen Terrell's got a lot of focus. He actually got... If Pete Carroll is ever thrown a player under the bus, he did it with Stephen Terrell on Saturday night, saying you cannot be beaten by a post route in this scheme. Torrey Smith is on IR, I think, so there's not much of a deep threat for the Niners, but... There's going to be some offensive focus on him this week, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, he needs... I said last week, this game kind of... It doesn't matter in terms of what we do going forward in the playoffs, but he needs to show something this week, because I've been... Obviously, you compare him to Earl Thomas, and that's not fair on anyone, but he has to step up a little bit this week, because he's having to cover a lot of the time for mistakes Jeremy Lane's making.
Yeah, but the 80-yard touchdown is on him. I know Jeremy Lane got beat, but I have no idea where Stephen Terrell's going on that play. There's quite clearly only one player running deep, and he went to the opposite side of the field to help Sherman, and Sherman doesn't really need much help, really. But especially when he's not faced against J.J. Nelson. But yeah, but I think the best thing Stephen Terrell seemingly did on Saturday was make Earl Thomas's mind up, who tweeted pretty soon after the game that he was coming back next year after a week of worrying interviews on Rich Eisen's show and things like that, saying it sounded like he was a player who was at the end of his career. But Stephen Terrell's play, or someone, the text messages from someone in that building, convinced him to come back. So hopefully we'll get him back and see him back in the field next September. Confident, Russ?
Yes. sorry, Mark, but yes.
No, I'm completely with you.
we should be able to run up the score, but like I said last week, it doesn't matter. We can score 70 points and it doesn't give me any confidence going forward towards the playoffs.
The only way it will matter is if we struggle and the Saints win. So then we've got 2 weeks to sort it out before the offensive thing. But yeah, I don't see much of a struggle happening. I think the game in week 3, the scoreboard was definitely tilted by two Carlos Hyde runs in the late rounds of the fourth quarter, because that was an absolute domination, really, for 50 minutes of that game. And the one without Carlos Hyde, I think you'll be somewhat even more lopsided, even with all those issues, I think. But yeah, I'm quite confident. Mark?
Well, you know, I made a misstep earlier when I was talking about Vance McDonald. I was meant to be talking about Garrett Celek, because obviously Vance is now on IR. And if you look at the receiving options that Cap's going to have this weekend, you've got Aaron Burbridge, Chris Harper, Jeremy Curley, DeAndre Smelter and Rod Streeter.
I've never heard of three of those.
Well, I mean, that says everything about where we're going at the moment, and, you know, lays weight to my thoughts on why we're going to need a new GM come the new year. So if you don't beat us, I mean, we've got some running options in Drone and Harris, but I just can't see anything other than a really heavy defeat against the Seahawks, which is just how I wanted to round off the year.
So prediction, Mark? We'll have an optimistic one and then a realistic one.
I mean, optimistically, if we can keep it tight because the defense hasn't been playing badly despite the weakness, the obvious weakness in the run game. The pass game they've been okay. So if they can force Russ to pass the ball a little bit more, maybe we're talking about losing by seven, sort of 14-21 kind of game. If things get out of hand in the run game, which is a possibility, and given the lack of options, you could getting a goose egg and you putting up 40 and taking a nice win into the playoffs. I think for you the main thing is if you can get to halftime and start to bench starters, which is a realistic proposition against this team, then I think you'd be okay.
Yeah, I'll before that, I think it'd be something. I think the offense, what those offense will be able to do some things. I think field position will be a key thing for that. So I think it'd be. I think I've got. And I pick on 33-6. I think I've got. I somewhat hastily said 2 weeks ago that we wouldn't give up a touchdown for the final 3 weeks of the season, and Carson Palmer goes ham on us last week. So, I'm quite confident. And obviously, all Seahawks fans from 6 o'clock till 9 o'clock on Sunday will be New Orleans Saints fans. We will know if we can get the number two seed by the time game, probably by the time the game kicks off on Sunday night, so go Saints. Moving on, while we have Mark and the three-man pod for a little while, let's roll out some true or false. So here, Mark, we just give a statement whether we believe it to be true or false, and we just agree and give our reasons why. So, Ross, do you want to kick us off?
Yes. Okay. True or false, the Buffalo Bills will end their 17-year playoff streak next season.
False.
Yeah.
I think they seem to be wanting to run Tyra Taylor out of town as quickly as possible.
Which I don't understand at all.
Which is just the weirdest thing. I think their GM is second to Balkin.
Unfireable.
In the luckiest to still have a job stakes. He's now being given the chance to hire what, his third coach in 6 years, and it's just there's only one constant there. And they've got the Sean McCoy, who's having probably the best year of his career. They've got Sammy Watkins, who they give the world up for, and he's either injured or not targeted. And then they've got a defense which is paid quite a bit of money with Marcel Darius in the middle of it and stuff. It just seems like a rudderless ship with all the. And it's a division where it's a division also where the top team for so long, the Patriots, they probably have 3-4 years left, and the Bills are as far away from them as they've ever been, really. But
I couldn't agree with you more on that, because we did a very similar on Rex Ryan being fired this week and looked at the unbelievable statistical record that Tyrod Taylor said. We were banging the drum from when he was coming in as a third choice quarterback at the start of last year. He's actually statistically, I think he's only bettered by Jim Kelly as a quarterback for the Bills, which is absolutely phenomenal. He's so much in front of the likes of Ryan Fitzpatrick, and no one seems to really give him any credit for it. You know, obviously you've got the Sean McCoy as well, an incredible weapon.
Yeah.
But they don't seem to get the coaching. And if you look at the other teams in that division, obviously the Patriots are well out in front, like you mentioned. The Dolphins have looked really good this year and look like they're going to get a lot better next year. And I really rate the Jets team and particularly their head coach as well. I can't really see them turning that around. And to be honest, they're more likely to finish bottom of their division next year than they are to finish top of it.
Yeah, I'd agree. Also, I was over in Seattle for the Monday night game against the Bills, and the things that offense was doing with Tyrod Taylor, it looked like the Seahawks were supposed to look like. All the play action and then rollouts, and obviously the running game with the Shady. I think his nickname is Ty God, and he's so, so good. I just don't understand all the...
I've made the case this week that if we're going to lose Kaepernick and he's likely to get released, I would quite happily take that risk and bring him to the 49ers because he's the same sort of quarterback, but he's more consistent. The other thing is, you look at what the Ravens said when they lost him. John Harbaugh was devastated that he couldn't keep him there. And what Ray Lewis said was, he said that when he came in as a rookie, he was already making better passes than Joe Flacco. And that was after he'd retired. He had the freedom to say... He wasn't tied to the team, and to me, this is a player that's got a lot of development still to make, and it's good enough already.
Yeah, that's definitely great. For me, I'm going to stay Seahawks. Are the 12s this year showing how spoilt we are, really, with our reactions to the season? Because if we win on Sunday, it will be the fifth straight year that the team has had 10 plus win games, and the years before Pete Carroll rolled into town. They had 5 wins in 34 years. 10-plus wins. Is this the fan base that's spoiled us?
Yes, but I think they were well within their rights to be booing at halftime last week because they pay a lot of money for tickets and that first half performance was completely unacceptable.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Mark, what do you think?
I say you look very carefully across the division at where the 49ers sit. You mentioned we had a brief spark of success under Jim Harbaugh. It lasted the best part of 3 years. They axed him too early. And that was a little bit of fan pressure. Not directed at Jim, but you put pressure on the team and the owners sometimes make the wrong decision. Mm. And they might get rid of someone that is actually a key part of the roster. So, I can see your frustrations. But just be careful what you wish for.
Yeah,
but also I think Tom Cable falls into that thing, to be quite honest. At the same time, I think he would be something we could happily get. And as I said on Facebook, I would drive into that and I don't even drive.
Yeah, my bullet's directly aimed at Tom Cable, not Pete Carroll.
Yeah. If Pete Carroll leaves this, then things will change. But I think the most important person is Schneider, because if he keeps his way of seemingly won't happy to give up on things like Harvin and Kerry Williams, I think we might see something similar this offseason with Jeremy Lane. I think when he admits his mistakes so quickly and readily and has drafted relatively well, although he's had a couple of down years with 13 and 14, I think, probably. But yeah, I think Snyder's the most important cog to that whole machine. I think Pete Carroll is just more the program, isn't it? And what's the word he uses? The philosophy and all that stuff. But I do think the Seahawks fans are showing that they are a little spoiled this year with what we've had. What we had for 30 odd years, obviously, the long time. The people who have been Seahawks fans since the 80s over here can vouch for the terrible 90s and all that stuff. I was talking to a few guys up in Glasgow a few weeks ago, and they were telling some of the stories, and it's just how much effort went into finding out the score pre Sky Sports and how embarrassing some of those scorelines were to what we're doing. Because obviously, we had a 6-year run where we didn't lose by more than 10 points up until Green Bay a month ago. So, yeah, I do think the Seahawks fans are somewhat spoiled to a certain extent. But as you say, at the same time, it's not been great, is it, this year? It's the weirdest 10-win season if we win on Sunday.
Kind of slagging them off because we've got 10 wins, but yeah.
I think the thing is with the losses, it's been so.
Yeah, they've
useless.
Been terrible losses.
They've been, yeah, they haven't been like. I mean, the Packers possibly was one we showed the most life, even though we turned the ball over every play it seemed at one point. But even that, we haven't. When we've lost by giving up, like Tampa Bay was 14-5 or whatever it was. The Rams in week 2, where it was... I mean, the Rams have won 2 home games this season. They haven't scored a touchdown in both games. And we were one of them. Mark, true or false?
True or false, the Seahawks are legitimate Super Bowl contenders this year?
False.
False.
The AFC's not great, but I think there's two, if not three, depending on where the Packers line up. Come Monday morning, I think there's three better teams in the playoffs. I think the Giants' defense could give us some issues, and then Odell Beckham is Odell Beckham. But yeah, I think they're at least the second or third best team in the NFC.
I'd be confident in the Giants in Seattle, but if we do that and have to go on the road to Atlanta, we are done.
I think you beat the Giants. I really do. Yeah. I think the Giants play perfectly into your matchup because
they have no run game at all. It's all
having
on
a horrible
Odell.
Season. Yeah. Yeah, well, Eli's having a horrible season, and I think it's very quietly going under the radar outside of New York. And I think if you come up against him, you would run all over him. Your defense would be scoring points. But I think, I can see teams like the I just still don't know what they are yet. I think you'd have a close game, and I think you're not going to be far away. But I say what I said earlier, the O-line is a problem, and I think that's...
Yeah, I've said on the pod for a few weeks, I think the Super Bowl champ will be an AFC team this year. Yeah. It's slightly hit with Derek Carr's injury last week, which is just probably the most debilitating injury to a playoff team has been for quite a while. But
Patriots, isn't it? We all know it.
Yeah, I think.
Well,
so.
I think the Chiefs have been very effective.
Yeah, I mean Tyreek Hill is one of those players where you clap, then you Google him, you're like, oof. Like Frank Clark, we cheer him, but then we Google him, you're like, oh, God.
Mm. Yeah.
But before we sign off, Mark, two things. Where can people get the Pigskin Wonderment on a weekly basis?
So you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and at pigskinpodcast.com.
Cool. And
if you
want
to get in contact with us.
Sorry, I'm gone.
Okay. I was going to say, if you want to get in contact with us on Twitter, it's at pigskinpodcast as well.
Yep. And what can people expect from this week's episode, Mark?
Two very sleepy men discussing week 17. It was an interesting podcast this week, but we're breaking down the New Year Six. So we've got a look at the college football's biggest games. We've got another college prospect going for our factory. We break them down and work out where they'll fit in the NFL. We've got previews. We've also declared the greatest quarterback of all time thanks to our fan votes. So we've got all that in this week's episode, which will be up tonight. Midnight.
Cool. That's it's if you haven't listened to Pigskin Podcast, it is one of the, if not one of the better UK podcasts on the NFL out there. Mark and James, for the most part, when he's not on his travels, do a fantastic job of the podcast. But please tell James to enjoy UW beating Bama on Saturday as well, because that is quite clearly a 15.5-point underdog, I think they are, but it's clearly happening on Saturday night.
I think you're going to be surprised, you might get some love this week in the podcast. So there you go.
Oh, that's a nice teaser. But yeah, massive thanks for joining us. Massively appreciate you bringing boosting our collective confidence after what happened to on Saturday. Just what you're dealing with this week. Massive thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thank you. No worries. Take care.
To sign off this week, then. Time for some lock and shock. Ross, your lock of the week is...
Oh, I'm going to have to do it. The Saints to beat the Falcons.
Lock.
I love watching the Saints. I mean, I don't agree with second teams, but they are my second team. And that Falcons defense can be picked apart by Drew Brees and Brandon Cooks especially.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. For me... God, there's some terrible games.
I mean, the Niners is obviously the lock, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. But for me, I think I'm going to go the opposite way I went last week. I think the Steelers are going to beat the Browns. I got the Browns win right last week. In shock. So, yes. I think the Steelers, they look quite good. When their offense is weird, they seem to score like points when they... enough points to win when they're not on full tilt, but when they just seem to wake up at a certain point of the game and just absolutely wipe the forward teams. They did that on Sunday as well, but I think the Steelers to beat the Browns. Shock of the week, Russ?
I've got two. I kind of need your ruling on one of them. would the Bears beating the Vikings be a shock? Because the Vikings have been appalling.
Yeah, but I think on record it is, isn't it?
Okay.
And Matt Barkley throwing five interceptions.
Yeah, he loves to throw a pick. That would be one. My other one, the Lions to beat the Packers.
Oh, I like that. I think my shock of the week is I think the Rams are going to beat the Cardinals.
They could.
Because there's always that thing, I don't know what the record is now, but before the Tampa game, there'd been 15 wins in 4 years the week after teams had played the Seahawks. And obviously the Buccaneers weren't... the Panthers, I think, won. But apart from that, there's not been many teams over 4 years. And they had to basically put their balls to the wall last Saturday to beat us. And I think the Rams will do just enough. That defense is still... I mean, Darren Donald's just absolutely ridiculous. The amount of times he doesn't get a sack but causes a sack is... They need to create a stat and a fantasy point system for Aaron Donald alone.
Just his own.
The amount of times, like William Hayes or Easley or Mark Barrett or Ogletree get tackles and sacks because Aaron Donald's forced the player into his grasp. It's ridiculous.
I quite like that. You can get the Rams +6 as well on most betting sites, isn't it?
Yeah, I think especially the Rams at home. They need to send LA fans home on a relatively good note, and doing that with a W against the Cardinals would be fitting because the patience seems to be already wearing thin with the fan base over there. It was half empty at kickoff on Saturday, but yeah, I think the Rams, Aaron Donald will be a massive part. And if anyone from NFL Fantasy is listening, please add Aaron Donald stat lines to fantasy points because I'll probably win a few more fantasy games this year instead of finishing fourth again. Yeah, next year we will try and keep track of these through some means and see how well we do over the year. Also, on next season, we will be bringing some new and hopefully more offerings during the week from ourselves. Do you want to expand on that, Ross?
Yeah, we're looking into the possibility of doing a Patreon. Basically, you sign up for a small subscription, anything from £1 to £5, and there'll be different. You'll get different levels of content for each whatever you sign up for. So £1, £2, £3, £4, £5 will give you different things. We're looking at maybe doing a weekly picks show, or I really like the idea that Sean put on our Facebook yesterday of having us compete against the crowd, basically. Like we kind of team up, me, you and Adam, to take on our listeners in some sort of picks league. That'd be fun. But yeah, all sorts of stuff like that. It just helps with I say it every week, and I don't like saying it. Podcasting isn't free, and things we do, we have to pay for. And we don't expect you guys to help us out, but if you feel like it, then it's 100% appreciated, and it goes. You don't even know how far it goes. It goes a really long way. So currently, you can help us with PayPal, just a little donate button on our pedestrianpodcast.podbean.com page. But yeah, we're looking into Patreon. If you have any ideas of kind of goals that you'd like us to give you for your money, then let us know. Find us on Facebook at the Pedestrian Podcast.
Yeah, and also on Twitter, Seahawkers UK is also where we will post all the podcasts, all our thoughts. Ross runs through his live commentary on game day as well. any members' questions this week, Ross?
On Facebook, one from Chris Balding. True or false, Alex Collins will be a Seahawk by the end of next year?
Next year?
2017. So I'm assuming he's taken into account what you said about drafting a running back and that sort of stuff. I want to say true because it seems to be very reactive to be on his side after the game we had last week, but he showed something for me in that game and I want that to continue to grow.
Yeah. Probably not. I think that's false for me. I don't think he will. By the end of 2017, I think he'll be around. But I think we'll draft one. Hopefully Wolves and ProSize can have a summer, spring and summer free of injury and niggle and have a full off-season. As it were. That's done for Cliff Avril this year, the first time.
Yeah.
He's had a injury or niggle-free off-season. He's had a career year with, 11.5 sacks he's got now? I think false. I think we'll draft one relatively early. And I think ProSize Rules, even someone like Pope, will stick around. I don't think he'll be on the 53. On the practice squad, maybe, because he'll still have eligibility for that.
Yeah.
But, I don't think we'll see him on the field this time next year.
Okay, one from Dave Bailey. True or false, there's an underlying problem behind the scenes that will surface after the season is over that will point to our season's problems, something like the Bevel Sherman incident, but others that we don't yet know about.
Is that a question or true or false?
It's kind of a true or false, yeah.
False. I don't think there's any issue. I think Sherman knows exactly what he's doing.
He went off again last week, didn't he? So my presses are a gift to you, basically.
Well, they are. He's spot on. He's absolutely spot on. They complained when, well, not so much the Seahawks beat Reuters, but more so the national media, when Marshawn Lynch didn't say a word. And then when Sherman says something, which he shouldn't have probably said, but he was goaded into saying it, they complain as well. So they don't know what they've got until it's gone with Sherman. And all, because look how many stories they got out of him in the last 17 days. He knows exactly what he's doing. He, as Adam pointed to last week, he is really stubborn, and he isn't going to admit. He doesn't have to admit if he was wrong or if he was fined or whatever happened last week, but he's spot on.
He's basically doing a Jose Mourinho, isn't he? Taking some of the attention away from other things.
Exactly. He is so tuned in to what's going on. He's so tuned into how to play the media. Look what he did after the Crabtree thing, where he blew up in Aaron Andrews' face, got all the thug stories and all that, all the nonsense that came. Then the whole world, the whole media, the whole sports media world was at his table at press media day at the Super Bowl, and he didn't say anything. He just was on script, precise, concise answers.
Yeah.
Because he knew that was probably going to create more of a story than if he'd have carried on calling Crabtree mediocre. So he knows exactly what he's doing. And Carroll knows exactly what he's got, because that's why Sherman is a leader on that team, because Carroll trusts him and puts him in that position. So I don't think there is any underlying. I said to Adam on a WhatsApp a couple of days ago that the main issue is the O-line. That comes to Tom Cable. Secondly, after that, our quarterback's having a meh at best season, even with I think he's passed his yardage total already from last year. It's his career high, which is just ridiculous.
Crazy, isn't it?
But after that, it's injuries. I mean, that defense has had, 20 minutes probably this season of the 11 starters you'd expect to be on that field, and that was against Carolina. Because Cam obviously missed a few weeks. Mike Morgan missed 2.5 months. Bennett missed a month. Earls obviously missed the last 6 weeks. KJ Wright's been out a couple of plays. We got dinged a few times. Frank Clark hasn't always been there. Cassius Marsh has been on and off because he's had a few bonehead plays. But the injuries has been a bigger part. I think that's a bigger part of what's going on. I don't think it's any. There probably is underlying things, because there always is when you got a room of those many egos and those many strong personalities as we've got. It's going to flame up, because obviously it did with Percy Harvin a couple of years ago with all the punching of Golden Tate and that stuff. That hasn't changed at all. If anything, it's probably accentuated more by the success. And I think that's false. Russ?
I want to agree. I think I don't think there's any massive underlying story like the Percy Harvin thing. When that all came out, that was kind of like, oh, okay, that wasn't kind of expected.
Makes sense.
I think it's just, it's just a lot of alpha dogs, basically, all wanting to just, like with the Sherman stuff, they want to get their point across, but they just don't want to. It's sometimes detrimental to the team, but they have to get it out there. Like Adam said last week, he didn't want to apologise in public, but I'm sure he apologised to Pete in that meeting that they had.
Yeah, the fact that the news of that meeting's come out from Pete Carroll suggests that he's in full control of what's going on in that building. And the characters in that building haven't changed from when we were at the Super Bowl or coming back against Green Bay last year, winning Super Bowls and stuff. It's the same. No. They're just having a bit more adversity, I guess. But that again points to the fan base being a little bit spoilt with what's gone on the last 5-6 years with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. But any more?
The last one from John Maxfield, we've already kind of answered. True or false, we still have a chance of winning the Super Bowl this season?
No. Well, there is a chance, because we'll be in, as obviously, as we'll be in the tournament, as Adam puts it, but My confidence after Saturday is pretty low on this team. I think.
Yeah.
If the Saints lose, I think we've got two games this season left. If the Saints win, then we've got a shout because of who's going to have to go to Dallas, and I think they'll match up quite well with Dallas before we even get a chance at them if we are the number two seed.
Yeah.
But I think it all depends. It's our own fault with on the Saints and that defense against the best offense probably 10, 15 years in the NFL scene. But yeah, it's what it is. But yeah, do you agree then still? Yeah?
Yeah, I think championship game is possibly as far as we can reach this year, because if we meet the Falcons there, it's all over.
That offense is ridiculous. Next week we will be back, but obviously we're not too sure with what sort of pod yet. If the Seahawks somehow manage to climb back into the number two seed yet again, go Saints, then we will look to bring a film pod for you, obviously, because we always do, recapping the regular season somewhat, maybe some sort of award show type deal. If not, then get ready for a game preview of the wild card round. Once it's clear, probably some point on Sunday night, that we will post something up on the various platforms we have at our disposal, and we may need some fan participation in the former to keep the old eyelids peeled. Where can people get us? And yet again, are able to donate, as some think we don't plug that on the regular.
Oh, okay. Ross. Then if I'll give you a big plug now. You can go to thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. If you're on a mobile device, scroll right to the bottom of your screen and you'll see a PayPal donate button there. If you're on a computer or a laptop, it's right there on your home screen, on the right hand side of the screen, a little PayPal donate button in the top right hand corner. Like I say, I hate to do it because it sounds like we're begging for money, and we're not begging for money. If you appreciate what we do and want to give a little something back, either share us around, tell people about the podcast, tell other Seahawks fans, post it on social media all over the place, or just leave us a little donation. £1 is massively welcome. £100 is even more welcome, but £1 is fine. Thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com is where you need to go. That's basically our homepage for all of everything podcast related and donate related. Of course, yes, Seahawks UK on Twitter, and find us on Facebook at our own page, The Pedestrian Podcast. Just search it and like it. We need 8 more for 100 likes.
That's pretty cool. As always, we are open for people to get involved with all the members' questions. If you want, as we started off at the very start of the podcast all those months ago, where you can record yourself asking a question, Ross can edit it in smoothly and seamlessly as he does. And then we get to that, because we're always open to questions, always open for you guys to get involved, because it's just as much your podcast than anyone's, because it is for the UK Seahawks as a whole, not just to stroke our three egos. But yeah, appreciate everything. Massive thanks to Mark and from the Peacekin Podcast for joining us and talking 49ers game this week. Enjoy the game on Sunday. Hopefully it will be smooth sailing on Saturday. On Saturday night, go Washington Huskies, beat Bama. This has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.